Hello and welcome to the IOF.com podcast, episode number 9 for the week of December 7th. Yes, 7th. I'm Matt Dodd, and I'm here with my usual...
Sydney San Martin.
There you go.
Co-host person.
Co-host. And so, this week, another podcast. Basically, in the iLife news... not too much exciting things are going on. It's getting closer to the holiday season. We've been working on some articles, trying to keep everything fresh. It's getting harder as for me and some of the other writers going into finals and things like that as school's starting to wrap up. But thanks for continued support and comments and all that stuff. Our manager... Our site manager.
Actually, here, I just want to quick mention in the topic of site news. I'm really getting myself into this. I attended Gizmodo Gallery on its opening night Thursday.
Save that for the cool stuff we did this week.
Oh, really? Okay. So I didn't. Yeah, we'll reveal that in a little while.
Not yet.
Pray continue.
But yes, our site manager, Keith, left us a voicemail, which he wanted to be included in this week's podcast. So you want to go ahead and we'll play that?
Yep, here goes.
Hey iLife podcast listeners, this is Keith Hoban, and I'm here to introduce the iLife's newest series, The Roundup. Starting January 2009, I will round up the biggest tech stories every week. It's like a quick summary of what's going on in the tech world. I've also been posting previews of the roundup each week. Here's the latest preview. From TechCrunch, Opera 10 browser, now in alpha. Opera Software has released an alpha version of its Opera Browser 10. It will have a new rendering engine called Presto 2.2, which is supposed to be 30% faster than the previous version of Presto. It will also be fully compliant with ACID 3. I think that this is a great step no matter what browser you use, because it will inspire competition and give even more features to the next generation of browsers. Congratulations to Opera for taking the first step. And I know at least one of our iLife writers, Matt Rosenhain, is trying out the new release now, so expect to see an article about it in the near future. That's it for now. The roundup will be published every Friday at noon Eastern, starting January 2009.
Thanks, Keith. Now, hey, let's move on to Apple news.
So this week there's a number of interesting Apple items. The first one that I have in no particular order is 10.5.6. Basically, Apple seeded developers with build 9G52 of macOS 10.5.6. This latest seed asked developers, among another 100 things, I think, to test MobileMe syncing and some mail character sets, as in mail.app, and it fixes about 100 problems, bugs, issues with OS X. So this is a release that's expected to be within everyone's hands before the holiday season, or maybe perhaps before the end of the year. Of course, there's no definitive release schedule that we know of, but that's just based off of the number of builds and the frequency of them.
All right, great. And I mean, the number of fixes, as we were looking over earlier, the type of fixes is pretty wide range. Everything from the MobileMe stuff all the way up to, like, something in the eject sound, which I didn't even know existed. But it really is a pretty nice range of stuff, and it's quite possible that people who have been running into some annoying problems will suddenly find those problems have gone away. But you're a MobileMe user, right?
Yes, so. I do subscribe to MobileMe, and I did subscribe to .Mac, and there are some issues with syncing across the iPhone and the Mac. Basically, the worst is when you read something on your Mac and the change doesn't get pushed to the iPhone.
What do you mean by that?
Basically, if I get a new mail and I read it on my computer, and I don't look at my iPhone until I'm out somewhere looking at my mail, and I noticed that there's a new mail, and I'm like, okay, so I go to read the mail, And it's the same message I read however many hours ago on my computer. And to be very honest, I was not a good computer user, and I haven't extensively researched this, but basically I just have to go into the account on the iPhone and just let it connect to the server, and it just eventually just gets flagged as read, as it should, within, you know, usually a few seconds or so. So it's a little bit of an annoyance, but the push does work to both the computer and the iPhone, which is awesome. So I hope that 10.5.6 can fix these issues I'm having with syncing. I don't think it's what they mean by that is I don't think it's going to fix the re-implement the actual push on the computer, because it's not a complete push system. But maybe it'll sync faster or more reliably. I don't know exactly how Apple plans to take care of it, but hopefully it does get taken care of. That's all I care about.
Yeah, and it does look like they're doing some significant work on reliability, at least. They're mentioning things about testing sync in different environments on tough networks or high latency networks, and just making sure that everything syncs properly and at a reasonable frequency on the Mac. So who knows what that could fix, but it could be interesting. Yeah. All right, anything else with 10.5.6?
As far as I'm concerned, that's just about it.
Great. All right, well, hope to see that soon.
The highlights.
Let's see. Snow Leopard, new build. They're actually starting to ramp them up. This quarter one thing could become a reality. Recently, build 10A222 was released to developers of Snow Leopard there. And what am I looking at? Yeah, that was that was just recently. And actually, where was I looking? Yeah, it was on the 4th. So just a few days ago. And some changes there. Okay. a bunch of little improvements and fixes just to make where things are starting to work properly. The biggest or most notable changes are in Grand Central, and that the system that's being introduced in Snow Leopard, that's according to Apple going to be pretty revolutionary, that is going to allow the computer to break tasks up between any CPUs and GPUs and whatever that it can find in the computer. So, so application writers are no longer going to have to worry about multi-processor support in their applications. It will just happen automatically, and you know, as decided by the operating system. And it could actually end up tying in significantly to the new MacBook Pros with the dual GPUs, which right now can't be used simultaneously, but it is possible that with Snow Leopard, they'll be able to just use all the cores at once if it wants to, and Apple can change it however it wants. Anyway, so there were some fixes made to Grand Central Dispatch in this new build, and also, what was the other one? There are significant changes in Exchange syncing, which now works mostly in Mail, iCal, and Address Book. We should be able to get meeting invitations in iCal and accept them, reject them, add your Exchange accounts to Mail, send, receive. They're still getting some things with undo, right, in Exchange, so hopefully those get worked out. But it looks like they're polishing everything up, which is good. Promising,
I heard there's
promising for a release.
There's a number of issues regarding Exchange support that it wasn't even implemented, and it was really still sort of like undefined and almost missing, as if even though it's one of the big features. So that's definitely good to see. Obviously, neither of us get our hands on this stuff, so we can't report firsthand. But
and even if we could, if we did have our hands on the stuff, I mean, even one of the other blogs that we work with, The World of Apple, did post some information about new builds and what had it removed by Apple, or had Apple ask them nicely to remove the seed notes. So we unfortunately, that's not a very open thing to discuss directly, you know, in detail. But it's a good place for the OS to be. I mean, it's definitely not in that final, okay, test everything, make sure it works properly stage. It's just the play with things, it should work at all stage, instead of, yeah, there's a button, but it doesn't do anything stage, where we were back at WWDC, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
But there are also some interesting things happening in Snow Leopard with Rosetta and with PowerP support in general. You had something to say about that, right?
Yeah. Basically, there's a rumor that Snow Leopard is going to have Rosetta as an optional installation. So that means, for those who aren't familiar with the whole Intel transition, Rosetta was a piece of the transition that allowed Intel Macs to run PowerPC or applications, essentially code for PowerPC processors on an Intel Mac by this, I don't actually know how, it, is it emulation or, it's? I don't think
it's not emulation, I believe it's
it doesn't
more of a translation, as the name implies, that it actually translates PowerPC instructions to Intel instruction, or to x86 or x64, whatever the language, the instruction set is,
right,
to those instructions in real time. So it's a halfway between, it is emulation, but it's at a very, very low level, so it feels very smooth and very seamless.
Yeah, but anyway, so it was meant, so, you know, for developers who wanted some time or needed some time or couldn't translate the code to the universal binary, to have the Intel users still be able to use that code. So this is sort of a milestone. It represents the end of the transition from the PowerPC. Anyone could have really seen this coming. The PowerPC support is missing in Snow Leopard, which means that Leopard is the last OS, which is going to be a universal binary. For obvious reasons, it reduces the footprint of applications, the OS, a number of other things, performance, all that kind of stuff. So this is not necessarily surprising, but it definitely represents a big change for Apple. You know, you can probably just check a box that says Rosetta, I'm assuming, like, you know, X11 or printer drivers, when you do a macOS install, and either have it installed or don't have it installed. So, I mean, that's definitely an interesting little tidbit of information for the Snow Leopard release. I don't, no one has confirmed this. Neither of us can, but I guess this comes with a new seed or a recent seed. But it's interesting news, nevertheless.
Yeah, I mean, most people will probably end up making the decision to install Rosetta simply because there's so many legacy applications out there, or older applications out there, which are still entirely usable in Leopard and in Snow Leopard, but were written long enough ago that they're PowerPC only. But I guess it's mostly a hint to users that that they should start moving away from it. I wonder if, like X11 or some of the other optional installs, mostly X11, there will be a way to install Rosetta after the fact. Because if not, I can imagine some support nightmares where someone calls in and says, "Hey, my applications aren't working." It says something about PowerPC, and they say, "Oh, you must not have installed Rosetta. You have to reinstall your operating system." But hopefully it's not that bad.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps I think, you know, Sydney, if you put in a disk, I might be mistaken, if you put in the install disk, you can install those optional things without even restarting. I think there's a package you could just
open. In some cases, yes.
But yeah, it's probably going to be checked by default. But it could be the matter of, if you wanted to save so much and so space,
yeah,
you can uncheck it. I mean, obviously, you know, we would recommend to install it if it was an optional thing.
And it is still a much better place to be than a PowerPC user when Intel Macs first came out. I mean, literally, like, within weeks of Intel Macs being released, people were starting to release Intel-only software no particular reason, which... and there was no reverse Rosetta there.
Yeah. I mean, I used a PowerPC computer up until June of this year, and it was getting pretty bad to the point where not only is the processor getting slow and the whole experience getting just slow, you can only do so much stuff at once, but I mean, you know, so some software is not supported at all, and it was kind of a pain. But anyway, in completely unrelated Apple news this week, there is a lot of rumors about something at Walmart. I don't know, Sydney, you want to fill in here?
Yeah, I suppose so. Rumors started floating around a while ago, in October actually, that Walmart was going to start selling the iPhone, which is a little weird, for, you know, compared to the kind of reputation that Apple, or the kind of image that Apple usually likes to project. That was reported by Boy Genius Report. I can't talk sometimes. But now the release date has been re-reported as December 28th. Yes. And there are rumors that Walmart employees are being trained on iPhone activation procedures, in-store activation, even at Walmart, really? Further rumors that they're going to reintroduce the 4-gig iPhone as just kind of a sub-entry-level model, as they did... What was the size? With some of the iPod Nanos that were being sold at an even smaller size in other countries than they were at the U.S.? Do you remember what that was about?
Yeah, it was the... Two or four? I'm pretty sure it's a four. Yeah, because they only have 8 and 16. So it was the 4-gigabyte iPod Nano.
Which was kind of
the fourth generation iPod Nano, which is being sold in other places for cheaper. Do note, though, Cindy, they have been selling in Apple products at Walmart for a long time. I don't know how long, but you've always been able to buy an iPod or iPod accessories from Apple through Walmart. I think I actually might have started with the iPod plus HP thing. Remember that? I could be wrong, though.
Yes. That weird little venture.
Yeah, so this is not actually that new. The rumor's been around for a really long time in terms of news. I think it first started in September, or maybe even earlier, August, over the summer. I think it was given that... it might even been Boy Genius again. They reported that Best Buy... Three stores, Best Buy, Radio Shack, and Walmart, would all get activation iPhone shipments and activations within the end of the year. So this is not necessarily new news, but it was once rumored it'd come out in November, and I guess it's getting pushed back to even after the holidays, which is kind of strange. You'd think that you'd want to have it for the holidays, but who knows? It's definitely interesting, and it seems like the $99 iPhone at 4 gigs is not going to be the case, but it does look like it's pretty certain they will be selling iPhones. Like the 8 and 16, the typical sizes, the 8 gigabyte at $197, so you save $2.99.
Yeah, it's a deal. It's a deal.
Yeah,
anyway.
I mean,
but yeah, the original rumors were that 4-gig phone we were starting to talk about was going to be $99 only, with a 2-year contract, should be pretty amazing.
Yeah,
and points at Apple not only trying to take over the smartphone market, but the entire portable device market. It's like, do you need a new phone? Get an iPhone. Do you need an iPod? Get an iPhone. It's going to be pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to have an iPhone.
Anyways, speaking of iPhone news, iPod Touch things, the App Store has hit a milestone last week. Friday, Apple was reporting that users have downloaded over 300 million applications, and they confirmed that the App Store carries over 10,000 applications. So, that's a lot of applications, if you can imagine.
Yeah, and how many of those were free? That's what I want to know.
Good question.
How many people paid for applications?
You could also spot new advertisements in a number of print outlets, including the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and a couple other European publications, which were advertising under the brand of O2 and AT&T in the U.S., yes, this is great, great news. I think actually, kind of amazingly, that they crossed 200 million in October. I don't know if you can check me on that.
Sure.
So that would represent a pretty large increase from a month-to-month standpoint. I don't know, do you find that?
Yeah, and yes, they did indeed top... they hit 200 million about October 20 something. I don't have the day here.
So yeah, just a little longer than a month, basically. Pretty amazing. Great developer community that's evolving around the iPhone, even with its flaws and other things. Great time to be an iPhone or iPod Touch owner and an Apple fan and supporter.
And a developer.
And developer, yes.
To get in that market.
A lot of money to be made, except for the problem with developers now is that as more and more people get to the scene, it gets harder and harder to become popular and well-received and have your application have the same chance of getting out there as everyone else. But develop things. If you have a unique idea, please develop it. Or send it to us, because actually we're both iPhone developers and we both aspire to write an iPhone application, but we kind of lack any idea or motivation. So, I mean, if you have a good idea and you want to share it to us, that would be awesome. If it's a truly unique idea, then we would be interested. I don't know about you, Sydney, but I'm definitely speaking for myself there.
Oh yeah, I'd be interested. I would very much be interested. Not that anyone with a super cool idea would want to give it away.
Right.
But just in case they would want to share it.
Yeah,
absolutely. In that same vein, you ready to move on to the next story? Are you ready to move on to the next story?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. In the vein of iPhone and I suppose iPod Touch developers and releasing new applications and getting noticed, Apple has started allowing developers to give away promotional copies of apps. It's not a problem that most of us think about, but what if you're a developer, you've just released a cool new application and you want all the Apple and Mac and iPhone blogs out there and news sources to report about it and to review it? You're not gonna make them buy copies of the app, right?
Right,
yeah. You have to give them a copy of the app. And before, what developers had to do was try to send everyone little iTunes gift cards, and then they would have to eat the 30% Apple commission on that sale, and they had no guarantee that the person was actually going to use the iTunes gift card to buy their app, and it just kind of
or
convoluted. So
distribute over ad hoc, which is only allows, I think,
this is 100. True.
Or they can limit it, or I don't know what to deal with.
Yeah, no, and they can't. But the thing is, with ad hoc distribution, you can't just give it to someone. You have to
get their number,
get information from their phone.
Right.
You have to get that information to you. Then you have to create that, you know, build the app with that unique ID, send it back to them, and it just gets to be a lot of work.
Right.
And the latest method is significantly easy.
Yeah.
Or easier. You can create a promotional code that you can redeem in the App Store, and that will allow it will allow one person to download your app. So you can create up to 50 promotional codes for your app and send them out to anyone you want, and they'll download it. Very simple, very straightforward. Great.
Yeah.
Not much more to even say about that.
Definitely a great thing.
In that same vein, if any iPhone developers would like to try out this feature on us and let us take a look at something they're working on or something they've just finished working on.
Yeah.
And see if we can get the word out about there. Feel free to send it to us.
Yeah, we've definitely been the recipient of ad hoc distributed applications, most notably the Podcaster application that was later banned by Apple and now sort of has built-in support with the iTunes app on the iPhone and iPod Touch. But, yeah, we are always looking to check out new things. We do get emails occasionally from developers saying, check out our app, and we like doing it a lot. So if you're listening and you have something cool to share with us, please do. In iPod Touch, iPod, iPhone kind of news, again, the in-ear headphones are finally shipping. So earlier last week, customers who were early to order Apple's in-ear headphones started receiving their headphones. early reviews from sites like CNET, Engadget, Gizmodo, were generally impressed with the quality for the relatively small price. I mean, for headphones, I think it's $79. Includes a volume up and down button, as well as the typical click, which you can, you know, press once to pause, press two times to skip, press two times to go back. And do actually have two drivers in the earbuds. And so, yeah, people were impressed. And it's a great thing that's finally shipping. It's only, well, it was November then, but it's kind of, well, no. I take that back. It was December. So, I mean, they said it started shipping in October and September when they released it. And then November rolled by, and finally December they started shipping. So, good stuff.
Yeah, and these earbuds will work, by the way, just as a side note, on anything that supports an Apple headset,
yes.
So iPhones, iPod Touches.
Yes, actually, I want to make a quick comment about that, because there's a lot of nonsense going on over this. The unsupported feature on these headphones is the volume up and down buttons. The click button will work if you have an iPhone currently, and you plug this headset in. The volume up and down won't if you have an iPhone. If you do have the second-gen iPod Touch, it will work. And I believe the other iPods are compatible. The fourth-gen iPod Nano and the iPod Classic, I think both support the volume up and down buttons, because it has to do with the headphone jack and the extra pin and all this other stuff. But there was a lot of speculation beforehand that it wasn't supported by the iPhone at all, which meant that you can plug it in and you wouldn't hear sound or you couldn't press any buttons. And that's not true. The only thing that doesn't work on the iPhone is the volume up and down. But, sorry, just clearing that up.
All right, great. Great, good to hear. All right, in other news, Macworld is shrinking by the minute, it seems. First, on December 3rd, Adobe announced that they are not going to be appearing at Macworld at all. They called it a shift in focus, or they said that, to quote them correctly, they said that they will shift focus.
Well, they won't be exhibiting. I think there'll be some people there demoing CS4. But
that is correct. They'll do some demonstrations of CS4 apps, but they will not have a booth at the show floor.
Yeah.
And they usually do, so it's a little bit of a change. They didn't say too much about it, though, so interpret what you will.
Right.
And that was followed just a few days later, on the 4th, by Belkin and also Seagate, saying that they will also no longer be appearing at Macworld. They will no longer have booths there. And there are also rumors that other companies, say like Google, are going to be there, but are going to have much smaller booths. Last year at Macworld, when we were there, we got to check out Google's booth, and it was pretty big. They had stations all around with huge plasma TVs, with people showing off Google or employees showing off features of YouTube, and they have a big projection, you know, like a theater area where they were showing off features. And
they're
still going to be there, but it's just not going to be as impressive. And there are also rumors that at least two other big names, which we will not find out about yet, are going to be downsizing their booths.
Yeah.
So, the economy, I don't know, what is it?
Who knows? You know, you think that Macworld hopefully won't be too much affected by this. The show's been going for so long now that it's seen a couple of, or at least one that I can think of, because, you know, I'm only 18, but economic downturns. You know, of course, nothing is the same as the other. You can't compare this one to the last sort of, not even recession, but downturn in the economy following the 9/11 and terrorist attacks. I mean, you really hope that this doesn't affect Macworld in the long run, because it's one of these great long-running, a lot of long runs here, in the long-running tech expos, trade show kind of thing, that there's been a lot that has disappeared. You know, there used to be Macworld Boston, Macworld New York, but the Macworld San Francisco has continually just been a pretty big show, you know. And hopefully these trade shows don't go the way of, like, you know, us reading an article about newspapers becoming just completely online. And, I mean, you know, I'm totally for that. And obviously as an online journalist, I guess I could say, it's something that you can certainly see coming. But I don't know. You know, just Macworld's a great, great show. And hopefully this doesn't foreshadow any other bad, big events in the future.
Yeah. Oh well.
The last story we have for you guys tonight is about iTunes going DRM-free tomorrow, which is today's Monday, tomorrow's Tuesday. Rumors, this is just coming in as we're recording this, rumors are pointing to a French site called Electron Libre.
Yep, at electronlibre.info.
Right.
If you can read L-I-B-R-E. That. You can read French.
Basically, they're breaking a story that says Apple has finally reached an agreement with Sony, Universal, and Time Warner, and will be offering iTunes Plus, or basically just DRM-free at 256 kilobytes a second, tomorrow, Tuesday. Tuesday. So this is
probably
huge.
Today or even yesterday for you guys. So tell us, people in the past, how it went.
this would be a huge story, and this is something that was rumored in November. There was people who had experiences in the iTunes store where they saw some tracks under these labels starting to appear as iTunes Plus, which corroborated with a report that came out, you know, within that time period that these deals were being finalized. You know, all I have to say is that if this goes through, it's going to really, really hit hard on Amazon and other competing music stores to iTunes, because right now iTunes has a huge market share and they may be losing, they may be getting ready to lose their market share to these newer sites that have DRM-free and other features. But, I mean, this would be a big, big, big win for Apple and iTunes.
Yeah, no, I mean, just to play devil's advocate here a little bit, you could argue that 95% or so of the people out there aren't really going to care about iTunes going DRM-free. I mean, this is the same kind of a market that was happy, or that it still and still is happy with subscription sites like Rhapsody.
Well,
that... where you don't actually end up owning any of your music, that you just pay, and if you cancel your subscription, all your music goes away. They're going to have to market in some interesting... Well, I mean, they won't have to market it in some interesting way, because if it's becoming a standard part of the store, it's not going to be a huge market that will flock to iTunes.
I'm not saying flock, but I think it's going to, in the long run, keep people in iTunes. And keep them from going away. And keeping Apple's market share up. I agree with you, what you say. A lot of people are completely ignorant to the fact that DRM exists, and iTunes has DRM currently. Or most of it is DRM-based. What I have to say to that is, it's just good stuff. And when someone finds out, they'll just be happier they're using iTunes. If they don't use it now, they may have more incentive because they have a huge collection. And, yes, subscription-based services have always had trouble getting anywhere. There's a lot of people who use Rhapsody. There was a number of other services that came and went, especially in these sort of shaky economic times. It may weed out a couple more. Subscription-based, in my opinion, is not the way to go. I prefer to own the music. The market share of these services and the success of these services seem to prove that most people feel the same way. But you never know.
Yeah. And it may even also just... Sorry?
No, I was finishing up. You never know.
Okay. No, it may even just be that people need more time. I'm thinking about it now. More time to figure out what they really do want. That a subscription-based service where you don't end up owning any of your music is nice for a while, but then you may end up in you know, I mean, because all this stuff is still very new. That's all people have only really been buying music online for a few years. Back once people have been doing it for, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, they may start to learn the advantages of having music that you can just own forever without having to worry about platforms dying and service providers dying and changing to new applications.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
One last question, though, for the people in the future. If this is true, can you convert purchases to DRM-free?
Ooh.
iTunes
doesn't iTunes have a program now to upgrade upgrade songs to iTunes Plus?
This is my memory serving me wrong, but when iTunes Plus came out, it was $1.29 per song instead of 99 cents. It's since been reduced to 99 right. cents. I remember that you could upgrade your library for the additional 29 cents, or well, 30, but is that going to... I don't know if you can still do that now. If you can, like, for no money, you can upgrade to iTunes Plus. I don't know. This would just be something interesting to see what happens with that. But anyways, yeah. I'm ready for it.
Yep. Oh yeah. Absolutely. I'm poking around here.
I mean,
here we go. iTunes Plus. Here we go. Upgrade my library. Big blue button in the middle.
Okay, so cool.
They're charging me... it says that I have two songs in my library that I purchased from iTunes as regular iTunes.
DRM.
And for 30 cents per song, they're purchased the original price of 99 cents per song, I can upgrade them both to iTunes Plus. Which isn't too... So it's... Okay, the pricing metric things are on that are... 30 cents for an individual song, 30% of the price of a full album, if you're upgrading a full album, or 60 cents for a music video, to upgrade that to iTunes Plus as well.
Great.
So they may drop that price a little bit, but unless they totally take this feature away, which is unlikely, there will definitely be an upgrade path.
Cool.
For people to upgrade, to bring up their libraries. But it'll be pretty expensive for some people who've been buying for iTunes for years. True. If they really want to do that. Well, we'll see.
Anyways, that's just about it. That's all we have for Apple News this week. Now, Sydney, you can finally continue with your story about something cool you did this past week.
Yeah, I went to Gizmodo Gallery. And I went there on opening evening, hung out for a little while. And it was fun. I'm planning what I wanted to say now is and commit myself to, or what I don't want to commit myself to, but I guess I have to. Is that I took a bunch of pictures, and I'm going to put them all online and write a story detailing my experiences there, because it was pretty interesting. They had some really cool gadgets there. It was a surprisingly small space, and it wasn't like a huge party kind of a thing. There were maybe 20, 25 people max in there at a time, sometimes a lot less. It was a small space. But it was a very friendly environment, and... maybe more than 25, maybe like 40 or 50 when it was totally packed. But they had a lot of cool gadgets that you can get if you buy, but maybe out of your price range or just not practical enough to own. And then a bunch of stuff that just on display that you're never going to own because they're prototypes or just obscenely expensive or not available to the public or a few things that were custom, made, modded, whatever. I just got to poke around. They had the famous 105-inch plasma TV, which is as impressive as you might imagine. It's, full 1080p. And you can sort of see the pixels a little bit, but if you can learn to ignore it, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there were some big, names and faces there. What was his name? I just had a page open.
Well, all the guys from Gizmodo.
Phil Tarone. Yeah, there were some people from Gizmodo there. But then Philip Tarone brought his laser etcher.
Did you etch anything?
Or actually, I did not etch anything. The thing is, you had to bring... I was going there straight from work.
You had to bring a vector.
I did not have time to put together any... You had to bring your own vector art. And I watched other people getting their laptops and their iPhones and even a BlackBerry etched, and it was a lot of fun. And I kind of wish that I had been ready for that. But he was only there for that one day. And actually, by the time I got there, I would have had to get online immediately. I mean, I wouldn't have had a chance because a big crowd of people kind of showed up at the end. And each etch takes, you know, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 minutes, depending on how big the thing is. But yeah, no, I look forward to that.
Yeah.
And they were raising money for Toys for Tots. So I guess, you know, gave some money. And they did a demo. They did a demo of the Wicked. What is it? Wicked torches.
Yeah, wicked the Wicked lights, torch. Wicked
something lasers.
Wicked laser torch.
It was. Yeah, it was. It was a flashlight, and if you use it normally, it just looks like a really, really bright flashlight. But if you focus it down to, like, you know, half an inch, you can hold a cigarette or anything flammable in front of it, and it will actually put out enough heat.
Yeah.
When focused on that spot to light it on fire. So that was fun. But more on that in text.
Okay.
So you can read about it.
Yeah, great. For me, not that much cool stuff going on this past week. Kind of just studying, sleeping, those kind of things. So that's definitely interesting. I wish I was in New York and I could go with you to check that out, because that looked like a lot of fun. But anyway, our last piece for this week and for our podcasts is typically the tip of the week. I don't know, Sydney, do you have anything for us?
I do. I mean, I have a lot of little weird, really weird little tips floating around. So here's one I want to share that some of you may have found, but you have to kind of poke a lot to kind of really figure out how it works. So I'm going to share it with you now, and hopefully it's something new. You can play around a lot with window ordering and window focus, in OS X using the command key. What I mean by that is, if you have multiple windows open, one behind the other, I'm just doing this off the top of my head. I don't have any of this written down. So, if you hold on the command key, you can interact with windows that are underneath the current window without bringing them to the front, and this can be really useful. So I'm in Safari, and I am switching through. I have a window open in the front, but I'm switching through tabs and looking at windows in a window in the background without bringing it forward. And I can also select text. Letting go of the command key. I can select text in the window in the background, drag it over to another window, select images. You can close windows in the background, move them around, whatever you want, all without messing up your window order. It sounds like something very simple, and it is, but there have been occasions where I have things laid out just right that it's been invaluable. And it works in most applications, most Cocoa applications especially. So just if you want to, you know, if you see a button or something you want to click in the window behind, just hold down the command key and give it a try. Awesome.
Yeah, actually,
it's fun.
I use a lot like two-finger scrolling and those kind of things in other windows by hovering your mouse pointer over it. But yeah, that's definitely a great tool.
Okay, here's a second tip actually that I just have to throw in here. That is from a question that was asked at a Mac users group meeting that I was at several months ago, and someone wanted to know if it was possible to put the date up in the menu bar along with the time in the little menu bar clock thing. And no one really seems to know the answer. Everyone's like, some third-party apps do that. I don't know. I stayed silent, but I knew I had heard about it somewhere. And I went out and I found out how to do this, and it's a really cool trick. Here's what you got to do if you want to do this. Go into your system preferences and go to international, of all places. And go over to that formats tab in the middle. And now, if you notice, you can go to customize for dates or time. And there are little tokens that you can use to build, like tokens for day of month, whatever, that you can build out your date or your time. So what you got to do is hit customize next to dates. And then in this little text field here, build whatever you want the date to look like in the menu bar clock, right? You can drag in shorter names, longer names, put in commas and slashes, symbols, whatever. When you got that set up, do select all and hit copy. And then you have it on your clipboard. You can hit cancel. And then hit customize next to times. Now, when you're in times, you don't have any of the date tokens here. It just has hour, minute, second, AM, PM, time zone, and milliseconds. And pick the medium format, show medium. And now what you can do, here's the magic, you can paste that date out of your clipboard into this same field along with the time. And you can edit it a little bit, just make sure you don't delete anything that you need. And then You can hit that little arrow at the side of each token to select different ways of showing each element, shorter ones, longer ones. And when you have it the way you want it, just hit OK, and boom, instantly it shows up with the date in your menu bar, and that change will stick. And it's just so amazing. It's hard to tell if it's a feature or a bug, but it's very useful.
Awesome.
So, enjoy.
All right. So, yeah, those two great tips.
All right. So,
aside from that, I think that's all we have for you this week. As always, if you'd like to contact us, please visit theilife.com/contact, or you can email me. My name is Matt, and you can email me, and my email address is also matt@theilife.com. That's theilife.com. No spaces. Sydney?
I am Sydney San Martin, SIDNEY@theilife.com. And feel free to complain about my tips there or whatever else you want to do.
All right, but
that's it
for this week in the IOF.com podcast. I'm Matt Dodd. Have a good night.
Good night.